This week's episode of PFW Chicago Football Podcast brought to you by Loot Crate. Head to lootcrate.com/Shaw. Use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W. $3 off your first crate. Maybe some of these new Bears rookies will want to join Loot Crate. They're away from home, want to get some crates of awesome gear and collectibles from their favorite pop culture franchises delivered right to their door every single month. Includes a new t-shirt and pin in every crate, figures, comics, stuff for your kitchen, all kinds of exclusive items, Harry Potter, Marvel Comics, Fallout 4, Star Wars, less than $20 a month, and $3 off your first crate when you use our promo code SHAW, S-H-A-W. It's time to get to know the Bears rookies. Let's talk some Bears. Hello, everybody, and welcome to PFW's Chicago Football Podcast. Kevin Fishbane here. I am in one piece. I survived draft weekend 2017. A little sleepy, but ready to get at it, get after it, and talk about the Bears 2017 draft class. This is part one of our two-part special introducing you to the Bears rookies. This show, we're just going to talk about Mitch Trubisky, North Carolina quarterback, and Adam Shaheen, the Ashland tight end. So the first two Bears picks. And then part two, later this week, we'll talk about Eddie Jackson, safety from Alabama, Tariq Cohen, the running back from North Carolina A&T, and Kutztown offensive guard Jordan Morgan. But this episode is just about the Thursday and Friday picks, Trubisky and Shaheen. So to talk about Mr. Trubisky in a few minutes, you're going to hear from Andrew Carter, Tar Heels beat writer for the Raleigh News and Observer. He covered Mr. Trubisky's entire college career in Chapel Hill. Really good insight into some of everyone's questions about Mr. Trubisky's college career. And then we talked to the guy who threw the ball to Adam Shaheen in all those highlights you've seen, and that is his quarterback from Ashland, Travis Tarnowski. We'll be later in the show. John Solly, my co-producer, will join me in a little bit to talk about the draft. And, of course, my executive producer, Dan Mott, is here. You can follow me on Twitter, at KFishbane. I got really good at learning how to GIF things this weekend, Dan. Putting up some moving images for you to see how these new Bears look in GIF form. And yes, I'm saying GIF.
Gotta go. That's how you say it.
I'm a convert. I used to be GIF. And
see, I always go GIF, and then people look at me like I'm nuts.
Yeah,
I get like, what the hell's a GIF?
I get it too, but I'm really trying to stick with it. So you can see some GIFs of the new Bears. I actually put up a fun one Monday morning. Mitch Trubisky and Tariq Cohen's teams played each other 2 years ago. Tariq Cohen's longest run in that game was 20 yards. Mitch Trubisky had a 35-yard touchdown run. So I GIFed that touchdown run.
Nice.
You can get all of our Bears coverage at Bears_Insider. We got tons of stories on all the Bears, and plus all the stuff about the NFL draft. You can go check out our draft database at ProFootballWeekly.com. Greg Gabriel's scouting reports there. Also, ProFootballWeekly.com/Bears to get all of my stories and hub stories from a wild weekend at Hallis Hall. So before we get to Andrew Carter's interview, I just want to set the scene a little bit for you on what happened at Hallis Hall on Thursday night. I had seven players. I was hedging my bets that I thought the Bears could pick. And believe it or not, Mitch Trubisky was one of them. He was number seven. And I knew the Bears liked him. Some of it was probably my own bias. I liked him. I thought he had the best ceiling of any quarterback in the draft. But I never would have expected they would have taken him, certainly at number two, train up for him. And of those seven guys, he was my seventh one. I thought they would take at number three. I kind of was buying into the Deshaun Watson hype train in terms of the Bears really liking Watson. So there was a lot of shock and awe, obviously, in Hallis Hall when it happened. And you got to remember, as writers, we're all scrambling. We're trying to get our story up. We're trying to figure out what just happened. So it takes us maybe a day to step back and realize what just occurred. And before I'm going to talk more with John later in the show about the trade and everyone just ripping this move. I will say this, and this is from my perspective as someone who covers the team. It was an exciting night. And I think I understand Bears fans being frustrated, but there is an excitement level about a general manager of a team that's become one of the worst franchises in football, that has not had a franchise quarterback really since Sid Luckman in the 40s. Make a bold move like this to go take the guy that he thinks is the franchise quarterback. There's something that just there was just something in the room. Again, I don't know if this is going to work out. And I'll get in more detail about the trade and everything else they did in the draft and my thoughts on it. But just Trubisky in itself, I just thought it was cool. I think it's a fun storyline for this team. I think it just gives a jolt to a franchise that severely needed it. So that's kind of my perspective of just the moment it happened. And we'll get into the nuts and bolts in a little bit. But first, we want to introduce you to Mitch Trubisky. Let's get to know the new Bears quarterback, and to give us a lowdown on Mitch. And yes, by the way, we're going to call him Mitch. I talked to Andrew Carter, Tar Heels beat writer for the Raleigh News and Observer. Andrew, I want to start with the reaction in Chapel Hill to Mitch Trubisky going number two. Certainly there have been enough time where everyone around Chapel Hill knew he was going to be a pretty highly drafted quarterback, but I'm still wondering if there was as much surprise in his college town as there was certainly around the NFL that Mitch Trubisky was the story of the first night of the draft.
Yeah, I think people were pretty surprised by it. You know, maybe not necessarily that he went that highly, because there was some speculation that he might go number one overall to Cleveland. I mean, that had been reported, leaked out there a little bit on draft day. It turned out to be misinformation, the kind of typical draft day misinformation that comes out with teams trying to play each other a little bit. But I thought that when the Browns passed on him, that Trubisky might be waiting a little bit. I thought maybe he could be waiting as long as number 12 when Cleveland came back on the clock. And so people had this expectation that if he didn't go number one overall, it might be a bit of a wait for him. So I think everyone was surprised that the Bears traded up to take him. Really, there had been no mention of the Bears being interested in him, or that was a team that had Mitch on their radar or anything like that. So I think just the way that it went down, with Chicago trading up, trading a lot of picks, and then selecting Trubisky with that second overall pick, it was a surprise to a lot of people.
I'm always fascinated, Andrew, by the disconnect sometimes between college players and pro players. You have Marquise Williams there, who is a successful college quarterback, certainly not a pro quarterback. Then you have Mitch Trubisky with the 1 year there, but so many NFL teams, and clearly the Bears are one of them, believe he could be a franchise quarterback. Where people, you included, who have observed this program, Tar Heels fans that are still kind of wrapping their head around that this guy is considered to be that high caliber when it comes to the NFL?
A little bit. But there again, I mean, we heard for a long time, those of us kind of around the program covering it, heard for many years that he was really, impressing the coaches, his teammates in practice, how polished he looked during those instances. He played, I think, in 21 games before he wound up starting this year. So it wasn't as if he was a completely unknown commodity. He played well in his limited opportunities, especially two seasons ago, I guess the 2015 season. He completed something like 90% of his passes. I think he was like 40 for 47. They actually benchmarked Luis for one game early that year against Delaware, an FCS team, and Mitch came in and played really well. He actually earned the ACC Offensive Back of the Week honors that week. So we had seen him be successful in limited opportunities, and we had heard a lot just, in addition to that behind the scenes about how well he was doing. But I think the surprise was that it took him, only really, I guess, four college starts before people started talking about him in the way that he wound up being as a top NFL draft prospect. I think it was after the Pittsburgh game in September, where he led a pretty dramatic comeback victory. UNC was down two touchdowns midway through the fourth quarter. They came back and won that game. And Mitch winds up throwing a game-winning touchdown pass with a couple seconds to go to Bug Howard. And that was kind of the start of a national talk about him being, a top draft pick. So I think the way it played out was a little bit surprising. But we heard about this kid doing so well behind the scenes for so long. And then you're right, it is interesting. I mean, Marquise Williams was a fantastic college quarterback, especially his final season. And he doesn't even get drafted. I mean, he's fighting for an opportunity right now to play professionally somewhere, but still had a great college career. And then Mitch comes on board and you know, four games into his tenure as the guy, as the starter, he moves up into that echelon.
Now, Andrew's got a story up at the Raleigh News and Observer about, you know, why Mitch Trubisky did not start over Marquise Williams. I want to talk to you a little about that story. You wrote it after his pro day, and Larry Fedora, the head coach of North Carolina, cited the chemistry. During that time, though, in 2015, you know, because obviously not a lot of people in Chicago were paying much attention to what was going on in Chapel Hill, you know, were there calls for Mitch Trubisky to start? Did people kind of understand that Williams is the better option then? I mean, Fedora has this explanation now, which kind of, I'm sure he also said to kind of help elevate Trubisky's stock a little bit. But what was it like during that 2015 season?
Yeah, well, I mean, really before then, even the 2014 season, that's when the competition was truly kind of open for the first time. Mitch and Marquise went into that year competing in August in the summer. Marquise had a slight edge because at the end of the 2013 season, UNC lost its starter, Brent Renner. Went down with an injury. I think he missed the last four or five games. And UNC had an option then. I mean, they were considering possibly burning Mitch's red shirt, possibly playing him because he was sitting out that year, his first year on campus. Or they could have gone with Marquise. And Marquise at the time was kind of on shaky ground. He'd been out of school due to some academic issues not long before that. And they went with Marquise. He played decently enough. I think that edge and experience there, the final four or five games that 13 season gave him the edge entering the 2014 season. UNC tried this weird quarterback rotation between those two guys basically during the first half of the 2014 season, where Marquise was a starter, but Mitch would come in on the third offensive series. And it was this kind of wacky thing. It didn't work very well. And Mitch didn't play very well. He was coming into the game cold. They basically gave him one series. And if he didn't do anything, Marquise would come back in. And it was this kind of odd, awkward arrangement. And the defense that year was absolutely terrible for UNC. It was one of the worst defenses in school history. But Marquise, to his credit, played decently enough. And so then he had the advantage the next season. So it wasn't quite like this open competition entering the 2015 season. But that said, Marquise did struggle a little bit early on that year. They played against South Carolina to open that season, a nationally televised game on ESPN. They played that game in Charlotte at Bank of America Stadium. And Marquise was terrible. He really cost UNC the victory that day. He threw a really bad interception in the end zone late when UNC had a chance to win. They were driving about to score the go-ahead touchdown, and that turnover happened. So, yeah, there were some calls about, you know, sitting Marquise, playing Mitch. And four games into that year, that's what happened. I mean, Marquise got off to a bad start. They put in Trubisky the rest of the game. Mitch played fantastic. He threw for 312 yards and four touchdowns. But then after that, Fedora went with Marquise again. I mean, Marquise was just a really beloved guy among his teammates. He had this really infectious, positive personality, really known for his leadership. And to his credit, too, he did add a different dynamic to the offense because he was much more of a kind of run-first type guy. Mitch is actually faster than Marquise in terms of just straight-ahead speed. But Marquise was a guy who really embraced contact. He was kind of running through people. So that did add an attractive option to the offense that maybe wasn't there with Mitch. So the coaching staff felt comfortable with going with Marquise, and you know, they thought that they were going to have Mitch as a starter for 2 years, and obviously it didn't work out that way.
You can follow Andrew Carter on Twitter at _AndrewCarter, and I want to then fast forward to last season, 2016. And I think it's very easy for NFL folks to look at the 8-5 record. You look at the bowl game, two interceptions, and I mean, he made some sensational throws in that bowl game too, and almost brought the Tar Heels all the way back. But you look at those in a vacuum, and you kind of wonder how he ended up being the number two pick. As someone who covered that team last year, what did you learn about Mitch Trubisky through that 2016 season, his first as a starter?
Well, I mean, you learned that the hype was legitimate. You know, we had seen glimpses of it here and there, you know, like the Delaware game the year before that I just talked about, and some other moments throughout. But the question entering last year was just all about, you know, whether he could sustain success throughout the year, whether he was really ready to kind of take over an offense and be the guy. And really, he got off to a questionable start. They played against Georgia to open last season. Trubisky wasn't necessarily bad, but he was pretty average. I think he only threw for about 160 yards, no touchdowns in that game, no interceptions either. But afterward, he kind of admitted that he was a little bit nervous, that he was jittery, that he kind of shrunk in the moment there, his first college start under the bright lights. And so the question after that was, you know, can he kind of get it together mentally to succeed? You saw some glimpses of it the next week. They went up to Illinois. He played pretty well. And then after that, really the next three games, one of which granted was against an FCS opponent, James Madison. But the final two of those against Pittsburgh, against Florida State, you know, he really just kind of got it rolling. And so I think we kind of learned for one thing that he was as good as advertised, as Fedora and the coaching staff thought he would be. You know, we kind of learned that he was what NFL people came to think about him. It really, he was this kind of prototypical pro prospect in terms of size, throwing ability, great arm. As cliche as it is to say, he can make all the throws. You know, he throws a really nice deep ball, a tight spiral, very accurate. He's really good with the short intermediate throws as well. And so we kind of learned along the way that physically, at least, you know, he has all the tools to be a successful quarterback at the next level. And we learned too, I guess, that it's possible to start a very limited number of college games and turn out to be a top NFL draft prospect.
And you talked about all that stuff on the field, certainly, and you kind of mentioned a little bit about some of the stuff behind the scenes, but what can you tell us about the way Mitch Trubisky was leadership-wise and tangible-wise and kind of some of the things you learned about being around the team that maybe we, again, don't see on film?
Leadership-wise, you know, that's one thing that the coaching staff really tried to stress to him. He had to be more vocal, that he had to take more of a authoritative role with his teammates. And honestly, some of that stuff doesn't really come naturally to him. He's much more of a quiet kind of, you know, stay behind the scenes kind of guy. He's not really a rah-rah type. He's not the type to get in anyone's face and tell them to get their act together. And I think part of that kind of played into why he had to wait so long to become the guy, because, you know, his predecessor, Marquise Williams, was such a magnetic personality. You guys really gravitated toward, and Mitch just really didn't have that. He's a guy, again, who the coaching staff really kind of had to goad into being more of a leader, you know, in terms of being more active vocally, kind of more aggressive in huddles, that kind of thing, in meetings. Mitch is much more of just kind of a stoic guy. I don't think that's necessarily a personality fault of his. I just think that's kind of the way he is. I think he's a type that would much rather kind of let his play do the talking. He's not really a talker on the field. And so I think that's going to be something that he's going to have to continue to address in the NFL, is working on being more of a vocal leader, working on establishing himself more maybe in the locker room among his teammates and that kind of thing. Because he is quiet. I don't think he's aloof in a negative way, a standoffish type way. You know, I just think that naturally he's just more of a quiet guy.
Most importantly for me, though, Andrew, how is Mitch with the media?
He's fine. You know, he was fine with us. I have no real complaints about dealing with him over the years. I mean, he's not the most entertaining quote or anything like that. He's not going to launch into, you know, really detailed, descriptive anecdotes that are going to help you write your stories or help pull up, you know, minutes on the podcast or anything like that. But, you know, he's certainly a nice guy to deal with. You know, pretty gracious. I think he's appreciative of the attention and coverage that he receives, but, you know, not necessarily the most thrilling quote, I'll put it that way.
Good to know. What was the Chapel Hill? Was there any outrage? Was there any, you know, big uproar when he suddenly became Mitchell Trubisky at the Combine?
Yeah, that did create a little bit of an odd storyline here, because I was, you know, me and some other guys who covered the team were like, well, were we calling him by the wrong name all these years? Like, you know, all he had to do was let us know if he wanted to be called Mitchell. So we asked him about that when he came back for his pro day. And it turned out that was a bit of an overblown story that kind of took on a life of its own. You know, as he explained it to us, somebody at the Combine asked him what he preferred to be called. And he said that his mother preferred Mitchell. So that turned into Mitch Trubisky wants to be called Mitchell. And it's not exactly that. I don't think he really cares what people call him. He was just saying that's what his mom would prefer that he be called. But as he said it, you can call him Mitch. Mitchell, it doesn't really matter to him.
Yeah, that was probably the most important answer he gave us in his introductory press conference when he said he didn't care what he called. And then we all the reporters kind of said, all right, we're calling you Mitch. It's fewer characters in our tweets.
Yeah, fewer characters. You know, it's better on Twitter there for the limited characters you have with the tweets, and, you know, save some newspaper inches too, so it's better for the environment.
Well, what can you tell me about Bin 54 restaurant, which is supposedly where the secret dinner took place between Mitch and the Bears staff?
Bin 54 is probably the best steakhouse in Chapel Hill. I've actually never been to it. That probably tells you something about maybe sports writers and their culinary tastes, or maybe their ability to afford such fine restaurants. I don't know. It's right down the street from campus. It's a really well-known steakhouse around here. I think it's been around for a good while. It has a great reputation. You know, if I was courting a guy, if I was an NFL personnel person and I was courting a player, I think Bin 54 would be on the top of my list in terms of places to take that guy.
Who knows, Andrew? If you had gone to dinner there that night, you could have broken this a long time ago.
I know. You know what? I'm going to have to hang out more at Bin 54. I think that's the takeaway here.
Certainly might be. Well, Andrew Carter covers the Tar Heels for the Raleigh News and Observers, covered Mitch Trubisky's career with North Carolina. Thank you again so much for the insight on the new Bears quarterback.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Big thank you again to Andrew Carter. And you should go check out, he's written a bunch of stories about Mitch Trubisky. You can go see that at the Raleigh News and Observer, and you can follow him on Twitter @_AndrewCarter to see some of those stories. Now joined by my producer, John Solly, to talk a little bit about Mitch Trubisky. John, the consensus in the NFL media world is that the Bears had the worst draft of all 32 teams, which is saying something for a team that went 3-13 last year and wants to build through the draft.
Yeah, not only the worst draft, but everyone's fighting. Nobody knows what's going on. The GM and the coach aren't getting along, and they may have put the QB in a terrible situation, and he might be upset. It seems from the outside perspective that the Bears might be in the running for the worst run team in the league at this point after a very interesting draft weekend.
All right, let's compartmentalize here. Let's break these down bit by bit, and then we're going to get to the Adam Shaheen interview. The Pace Fox thing. So there was the ESPN report that was kind of walked back that Fox didn't know it was going to be Trubisky until an hour and a half beforehand, and I guess they really couldn't know until the trade went through and everything. Look, you don't need to see a report to know this was a general manager's draft more so than the head coach. I mean, this is not the type of draft that John Fox and Vic Fangio had to have been making the key decisions, because, you know, you have a quarterback who's not going to play this year. You have a tight end from a Division II school, and you didn't have a third round pick. So, I don't know about Pace and Fox in terms of relationship and whatnot, but John, I mean, you could just look at the players that were drafted. You could say this is the general manager this is his part of his vision for the long term, as opposed to a head coach kind of having the upper hand, trying to make picks to be a more competitive team next year.
Yeah, remember when there were rumors maybe a year or so ago, maybe a year and a half ago, that it was really John Fox running things?
Yeah,
that's not true. And this draft certainly proved that. Ryan Pace went out and staked his claim with Mitch Trubisky and the moves that he made.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, we'll see how the season goes. We'll learn more about all this. I've said for a while, I found it fascinating that John Fox is in a position with a rookie first-round quarterback. He's never had this in 15 years as a head coach. But it's something that we're certainly going to monitor. And then the next kind of point of information is the Mike Glennon thing. The Chicago Tribune, Rich Campbell, had a great story about, you know, maybe the Bears doing Mike Glennon a disservice if they didn't tell him about this. He's at the draft party when they draft the guy who's probably going to take over for him in 2018. Then David Haugh, great writer for the Chicago Tribune, of course, said, well, wait a second, Mike Glennon, you've gotten $18 million guaranteed dollars. You are the starting quarterback next year. Like, this is the way the NFL works. Deal with it. I totally see both sides of that, John. And from my understanding of Mike Glennon, he seems like the type of person that should understand the situation and also should be a little frustrated. But you would imagine there's motivation for him. If he has a good year, you know, the Bears have a lot of options. And if he has a bad year, then they could easily go to Trubisky right away. So, and he totally should not have discounted the idea that they were going to take a quarterback in the first round.
If, as a franchise, one of your primary concerns is whether or not you're upsetting Mike Glennon, you're probably not in good shape. So
yeah, you know what? He was signed to a 3-year contract in which mostly guaranteed money was in the first year. I mean, there shouldn't be a secret about Mike what this franchise sees in Mike Glennon. They see someone who could be a good quarterback for at least a year, and you go from there.
I mean, Mike Glennon's Wikipedia page was updated to officially as a bridge quarterback. Like, he knows the deal here. At least he should, and he also should have expected that the Bears were going to take a quarterback at some point in the draft. Now, he probably didn't expect to learn that it would be Mitchell Trubisky at pick number 2, but this really shouldn't have been that much of a surprise.
Yeah, so he can be upset, but he could also understand where he's at. He can do both. It's fine. That's allowed. And then let's get to the actual trade up, because I think, John, you had the kind of bargaining with yourself about how you felt about this move from a Bears fan perspective. I opened the show with just my take, which is essentially that ignoring what I think about the trade or the player, I just think it's a cool jolt of electricity to a franchise that needed it by making a big aggressive move like this. But when we were taping this on Monday, I told my producer Dan Mott off the air, I have friends that only get their sports news from Deadspin, so I got a bunch of texts today being like, what were the Bears thinking? And we've seen the grades. So now that you've had a full weekend to think about it, where are you at with the decision to trade up one pick for Trubisky?
Well, look, if Mitch Trubisky ends up being that franchise quarterback, and Kevin, you and I talked about this, in multiple podcasts leading up to the draft, if Ryan Pace thinks that's the guy and Trubisky ends up being the guy, then none of this matters at all. It doesn't matter how many picks you gave up. It doesn't matter what the rest of the draft class is. If you found a 10 to 12 year franchise, multiple Pro Bowl, playoff winning quarterback, then none of it matters. However, Ryan Pace, I think, sort of took a bastardized version of what we talked about on the podcast. We thought, okay, if Deshaun Watson or Trubisky or whoever is your guy at number 3, and that's who you take, fine, you can totally stand behind that decision. But giving up so much to move up one spot in a draft where that had quality depth and a team that you need quality depth, it just seemed – and I don't think there's enough evidence that suggests that Mitchell Trubisky is worth what you've done. It may end up being that way, but I don't think that there's the evidence that Ryan Pace says there is, that Mitchell Trubisky was worth – the moves that you made to get to him. So that's sort of where it's kind of split. Trubisky may end up being the guy. That'd be great. I would love if all of this ended up being worth it. But I don't think the proof is there that the trade was worth it. And if you read Peter King's column today in Monday Morning Quarterback, he was a fly on the wall in the 49ers war room. 49ers kind of felt a little bit lucky, and certainly they were among the teams questioning what the Bears were doing. I thought that was a really good piece and kind of crystallized sort of what I thought, that I'm not sure what the Bears are doing. It may end up fine, but I'm not really sure what they're doing.
So you know where I stand with the trade, which mm-hmm. and I'll tell the listeners, I've never seen this month's consternation about a third round pick. That's essentially what the Bears gave up, because they got their fourth round pick back. And when you trade picks, Greg Gabriel was saying this the other day, future picks don't get valued the same way because so much can happen and you don't know where that pick's going to be. And knowing Ryan Pace, he might take he might get that third round pick back in 2018. So essentially you gave up a third round, a little more than a third round pick to move up one spot. And the Bears have not had a good third round draft pick in over a decade. And I understand that's unfair. So fine. 2010 to 2014, I looked at every third-round pick. 170 players taken in those 5 years, 7% of them made Pro Bowls. We have to understand that the chances that they just gave away someone who's going to be a quality starter are frankly slim. On the flip side, though, I do understand that when you have a team that's – when you are in a draft that is deep on defense, when you have depth issues on your team and you're trying to build the draft, why are you giving up picks? So I see both of those sides, but I'm a firm believer, and I've said this a million times, when you love a quarterback, you do whatever it takes to get him. And if they didn't take Trubisky and they waited till next year, they probably would have had to give up a first-round pick to do it. So the price doesn't bother me. Actually, John, this is a perfect segue. I have more questions about the second-round pick. And yep. Before we talk about Adam Shaheen, John and me, I got a chance to talk to the guy that threw Adam Shaheen the ball at Ashland University. So take a listen to this interview with Ashland quarterback Travis Tarnowski. So, Travis, let's start off with 2014, or whenever you met Adam Shaheen. What was your first impression of him?
You know, he was a tall, skinny kid, and that, you know, was athletic, and you could tell he came from, you know, playing basketball, and, you know, it was tough to kind of see what he could do at the time, because we had two senior tight ends who were both had played a lot of football for us and done a lot of good things for the team, and we're going to be the two guys that we're going to play. So he kind of just played a role, and he knew what his role was, and he worked hard after that, and because I don't think he was happy with that. My first impression, you know, he was a really just a kid you could tell that wanted to work hard and you know, was going to give whatever he did, whatever the coaches told him he needed to do, he was going to give his absolute all.
So your tight end coach, Reggie Gamble, was telling me about the 42-yard catch and run his first season, his first catch ever against Grand Valley State, mm-hmm. where he knocked over a ref. Do you remember that play?
Yeah, I do. It was like a play-action rollout right, and, you know, he caught it and then just kind of took off. You know, it was kind of like, dang, like, where'd this come from? You know, you kind of could see, like, wow, like, there's some potential with this kid. And actually later in that game, we were on like a 2-yard line and we ran a pop pass over the middle, fake like fullback dive pop pass. And I threw it up and he came down with it like over two guys for a touchdown. But then there was a flag because whenever he got too far downfield, so it got called back. But yeah, that was kind of his wow moment for everyone, because then the next game after that, you know, we went up to Michigan Tech, and I think it might have even been the first play of the game. He almost did the exact same thing. You know, so I think it might have been the same play. Caught the, you know, 12-yard drag and took it upfield for another 20 yards. So, I mean, it was, you know, that was kind of the first flash of seeing what he could do. And then, I mean, obviously the last 2 years, the rest is history, as everyone knows.
So you've thrown 26 touchdowns. Were you the quarterback for all 26 of his touchdowns?
Yeah.
Do you have a couple favorites?
Yeah, I got a couple favorites. The one that comes to my head is when we played at Northern Michigan 2 years ago, so 2015. It was actually the year we won. We went undefeated, won our conference championship, and we were struggling a little bit. And we were winning at half by two or three scores, and that they ended up coming back and taking the lead with about 2 minutes left. And I went on the field, and, you know, I told them, this is going to be me and you all the way down. We drove all the way down the field, and we had 8 seconds left, and we just called a timeout. We ran about the 6-yard line. And we ran like a fake, coach called a fake, you know, just outside zone play, and he released up the middle. And during the timeout, Coach Owens told me, hey, you gotta throw this to him or throw it away. And I looked at him, I said, I'm throwing this thing 10, 11 feet in the air. You know, can you go get it? If not, if these guys are on, you have to throw it away. He said, put it up there, I'll go get it. So I came out, and I mean, I threw it way up there with the guy on his hip, and he went up in the room, and he came down with it, and he took the lead with about 6 seconds left. That's probably my all-time favorite one. That I had with him, or I would say this last year, just the accumulation of I threw 5 touchdowns in one game and he caught 4 in that one game.
It was just one of those things where one of them was just a scramble kind of. I just rolled out right, and he just took off and just beat his guy right at the sideline. And it's just like we were always on the same page. And I would say that those two memories of, you know, the one catch at Northern Michigan and then the four touchdown game are definitely the ones that I'll never forget.
So I think I actually gift or gift, whatever the kids call it these days, right, one of those touchdowns from that four touchdown game where you kind of threw it as you were getting hit and he just kind of boxed out the defender. Have your friends noticed it because of Adam being all over TV? Your throws are on ESPN and NFL Network and us Bears beat writers. Everyone's also seen what you're capable of. Have anybody mentioned that to you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Adam's always, he said, you know, I wouldn't be here without you. I mean, like, you helped me out a ton and stuff, but, I mean, it was easy to throw him the ball. It was easy to want to do that. But, yeah, I mean, it's good. It's good for all of us. It's good for all of us, the whole university, you know. And, you know, people say some stuff here and there about, you know, that, like, you know, I have some friends from back home text me, you know, I just saw you on TV. I'm like, oh, like, thanks. Like, that's really cool. You know, it's been cool to see all that and, you know, kind of get a feel for what that's like. I mean, what Adam did and, you know, getting drafted was, that's like a dream come true for me. And so to see one of my, like, best friends, like, go through that was really cool.
Do you have any tips for Mike Glennon, who will be throwing Adam the ball this year?
Trust him, you know, put your full trust in him, because that's a guy that, you know, he's gonna work his tail off, I mean, and give his absolute all in the film room, in the weight room, on the field. He's going to do whatever he has to do to get on the field, and trust him. If he wants to go throw routes, you know, I'll tell Adam, go throw routes, and then if that's your guy, that's going to be your guy. Whether it's him or, you know, whoever else, and I know they just drafted Mitch Trubisky. So regardless of one of those guys is, I'll sit down and look at him in the face and say, this is, I know you quarterbacks, everyone always says, you know, I trust my receivers, but no, with Adam, he's a different type of kid where you can truly trust putting it there for him, and he's going to come down with it, or he's not going to let the other team get it. That's for sure.
What's Adam like off the field? You got any good off the field Adam Shaheen stories?
You know, he loves playing Xbox. You know, he's always, when he was training, you know, he'd call me or text me, like, hey, you want to play Xbox or this and that, and he would ask me if I wanted to play Xbox. He loves playing Xbox off the field. I mean, he always eats a ton. Every Friday night, me and him would go out and we'd sit down at the bar at the hibachi, and we would get a hibachi dinner together every Friday night. And that was kind of our thing. You know, we would just watch if there was another football, like a college football game on, and get a lot of, you know, rice and food and stuff. That's what we did. And so, I mean, but that's kind of, you know, that's a good memory that I have that I always take with me from Adam, is, you know, doing that every Friday before the game. And we did that for the last 2 years. And, you know, maybe that's why we had such good chemistry and we had good connection. And, you know, we could talk about anything to each other, and, you know, we'd always be there for each other. And, I mean, so I would say probably getting, you know, just fooling around, going and getting hibachi dinner every Friday night, or, you know, just sitting down playing Xbox with him and relaxing and kind of getting our mind off everything.
Were you ever with him during his famous Chipotle eating runs as he tried to keep put some weight on?
Yeah, you know, I was with him a couple of those, you know, a good amount of time. But, yeah, he ate a lot of Chipotle, that's for sure, at least, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. And, you know, he was always looking for people to go with him because he was going so much. It's like, man, we just went. You know, so, but yeah, I'm going to rip into him, that's for sure.
So, as someone from Ohio, Travis, did you know Mitch Trubisky at all as a quarterback and from kind of the same neck of the woods?
Right, yeah. We graduated the same year of high school, so it was kind of, I think I still have an article or a clipping or something. It was like the Cleveland area top quarterbacks, and it was me and him in there. So, I mean, I think that was pretty cool. And then just going with a bunch of, like, camps together as juniors and seniors in high school. I never actually got to play him in high school. But obviously, I knew of him and always watched him. I was close to playing him once, but we lost the playoff game before that one. So, but yeah, you know, we always grew up and kind of, you know, kept an eye on what he was doing and tried to, you know, I'm a competitor. So I saw what he would do 1 week or, you know, and I was like, well, he's doing this, you know, I can't let him pull ahead of me, you know, pull too far ahead of me. And, you know, he was always a good kid. He always sounded, you know, he talked, you know, professionally and was really well-spoken. And I mean, I think the Bears could really have something out of him. I mean, we saw what he did at North Carolina, and I'm definitely pulling for him, especially because my guy's going to be hopefully the next great tight end there. And I hope that, you know, a kid that lives 30 minutes away from me back home could do it with him. I mean, that'd be cool to see for sure.
So I take it you might be a Bears fan this year?
Yeah, I'll definitely be a Bears fan. Yep. I'll be a fan wherever Adam goes.
Awesome. Well, this is Travis Tarnowski, quarterback, Ashland University. He's thrown a lot of touchdowns to Adam, and you still got 1 year left there, correct, Travis?
Yep, I got one more season. Getting ready as we speak.
All right, well, good luck with everything, and we're looking forward to getting to know Adam Shaheen in the weeks to come.
Definitely. He's a good one, so go Bears.
To be in college again. Pretty jealous of Travis Tarnowski. Big thank you to him, quarterback of Ashland University. And you look up his numbers, very good quarterback. And if you've been watching highlights of Adam Shaheen, you can see that he doesn't make as many plays as he makes if he doesn't have a good guy throwing in the ball. So credit to Travis Tarnowski. Wish him and Ashland the best of luck next season. Adam Shaheen, the newest Bear, joined again still here by John Solly. And John, here's where I had some question marks for Ryan Pace. Again, I did not really question the Trubisky move as much as everybody else did. You love a quarterback, you give up whatever it takes to get him, and that's what they did. But you come to round two, you trade back, great. You get a fourth round pick back. You also get a sixth round that they package later to get Eddie Jackson. Awesome. Way to go. Great trade. And so many safeties on the board, flying off the board, still available. You have big needs to fill. And that's the pick that I feel like you have to get somebody that's going to be a day one impact player, because your number three pick is not going to be a day one impact player. So use the 45th pick to get somebody who could be a starter. They found a great one in the second round last year in Cody Whitehair. They found a really good one in the year before in Eddie Goldman, and they take Adam Shaheen. And this is nothing against Adam Shaheen, who I like a lot. I mean, you read about him, you talk to people about him, you watch the tape. You can see why the Bears love him, but that there is a risk in that transition, and I had some more questions about that move because I think there was pressure on that pick to be a guy who can start day one, and you know, I'm just not sure right now if he's going to be a day one starter.
When you're a three-win team and you're 45 picks into the draft and you can't say for sure that you've got a day one starter, I think that leads to some of the larger conversations that are being had about the Bears.
And we should make it clear, John. Ryan Pace he was asked about that, and he did say he believes Shaheen can step on the field right away. I think, and he's going to say that. I mean, obviously they wouldn't have made this pick if they didn't think this guy had potential. And you see the skills, you see the athleticism, you see the size, you see everything. And you hear about the work ethic, and there's no reason to believe he can't be successful, but that's just a steep transition that usually takes some time.
And it's another one of those picks that, this may work out. Like, Shaheen may be a Pro Bowl tight end. Like you said, there's a lot of great tools there, but we don't have evidence yet that he's a day one starter. We don't have evidence yet that this is a guy you can say, okay, tight end is set. He's now just in the mix. He's a guy that is just in the mix when OTAs start. He's a guy that is in the mix when the Bears go to Bourbon A.
And let's remember, too, the Bears are paying Deion Sims $6 million this year. As of now, a friend of the program, Zach Miller, is still on the team. Mm-hmm. And they have Daniel Brown, who they like. I mean, there are options there. And Sims is going to be your starter. And if Miller sticks to the team through camp, then he'll probably start as well. So that's where That's where I have a few more questions. Just like, you know, again, from our perspective, there are more starter ready guys available at that spot.
Yeah, it felt more like swinging for a home run. And again, maybe it works out. Maybe we're talking 5 years from now about how Adam Shaheen is the new Gronk. But again, what evidence? What evidence? And, you know, Ryan Pace will say, look at the tape and look at all the evaluations and all that. You know, a lot of people aren't buying it. I'm not buying it.
Yeah, and it's where they're at right now, and that's where you wonder about the Fox Pace thing, because, you know, if you're John Fox, you don't get Solomon Thomas or Jamal Adams or Marshawn Lattimore in round one, so now it's round two, and if you're John Fox, do you want a guy like and Shaheen who, you know, and also this, I believe it was Mel Kiper said that he was a guy who goes second round. I think Ian Rappaport reported that Shaheen was one of those guys that was going to sneak into the second round. So there are people who, you know, much smarter than we are, cover this game, who really believe this guy. And obviously Ryan Pace and this kind of stuff does. I think just almost, and you can't draft for PR, John, but it just would have been a bit of a better PR move to say, okay, this is the pick you all care about, and we're going to take someone from Division II. It just doesn't look great. Regardless, and again, this guy could become a great player, but just doesn't look great when it happens.
Yeah, and like we've been saying, look, if Trubisky works out and Shaheen works out, Ryan Pace looked like a genius. I mean, he really does. But right now, you know, you can't say that either one of these guys are going to be playing in game one of the 2017 season.
So that's kind of where the Bears are at. I mean, they're in a situation now where Adam Shaheen is going to be expected to be the number one contributor from this draft class in 2017. I mean, if I told you, John, a week ago that we'd be talking about a tight end from Ashland being the guy that needs to kind of represent this class, because he's most likely to get the most snaps. Simple as that. I think Eddie Jackson has a chance to win a starting job, certainly could be the punt returner for them. Tariq Cohen could carve out a role. We're going to talk about those guys in part two of this podcast. But right now, there's a lot of pressure on Adam Shaheen to perform right away, because we don't expect it from Trubisky. So Shaheen's got to be that guy.
Yeah, it doesn't. The biggest takeaway from this draft is that it doesn't give you a lot of reason to be optimistic about the 2017 Bears season, but you may have more optimism about the 2018-2019 Bears season.
Yeah, and I certainly understand why Bears fans are upset right now. I got a lot of texts on draft night trying to walk people back from the ledge. Look, let's see what Trubisky can do, because Ryan Pace's job relies on. I saw something too, a tweet from a Bleacher Report writer who quoted a personnel guy who said, you know, Ryan Pace just fired himself with that pick. I don't know if I got that verbatim. Well, no, duh. In terms of that, Ryan Pace's future is tied to Trubisky. So yeah. If Trubisky's bad, then it's going to be a whole new regime. But we don't know that. That personnel guy doesn't know that. No one knows if the Bears believe he's going to be good. And guess what? There's a lot of NFL teams that thought Trubisky was worthy of a top 10 pick.
So, absolutely. I don't want to come across as, you know, saying, hey, the Bears are doomed. We just don't know. We really don't.
No, and it's the draft grade is incomplete for me. So we will wait and see, and we'll get to know some of these guys in a couple weeks at rookie minicamp. But that'll do it for part one of our Getting to Know the New Chicago Bears special rookie podcast. Big thank you to our guests, Andrew Carter, covering Mitch Trubisky at the Raleigh News and Observer, and Travis Tarnowski, who is the quarterback at Ashland University, throwing touchdowns to new Bears tight end Adam Shaheen. Of course, thank yous to my producers, Dan Mott and John Sally, and everyone here at Pro Football Weekly. Thanks for listening to PFW Chicago Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Pro Football Weekly Chicago. Leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And soon, later this week, we'll be talking about the rest of the 2017 Bears draft class.